Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey everybody, it's Angela, and I'm here with John and Jim today. And today's episode is our takeaways from 2023. What we're going to do is just hit a few of the key concepts that we covered this year that we thought might be helpful to you as you wrap up the year. So we're going to start out with our first concept, and I'm going to go to John with that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest takeaway is one that I emphasize a lot, we emphasize a lot, which is the concept of our clients having one legal problem, like, right, identifying that one legal problem. And for us, we always talk about, for most of the clients, it's being in the custody of the state and needing to be in the custody of a family, preferably their own, as quickly and safely as possible. And the reason I wanted to emphasize this today is because, you know, even though I'm one of the people that emphasizes this the most, it's because just this year I had a case with a child who had some serious emotional problems. And his mother, whom he had not lived with in years, came back into the case and was suddenly very invested in regaining custody. But she needed to have the skills to handle her child in the state he was now in many years after losing custody of him. And I really feel like on that case, I somewhat lost focus. I got pulled into trying to stabilize my client so much and working so much on his mental health and his placement and whatever the crisis of the week was, that I spent less time on really engaging his mom in meaningful service. I might have had a better outcome, or at least I feel like I should have spent more of my time there than I did on trying to make foster care better.
That's the daily struggle that children's lawyers face, because what's put in front of you is the crisis of the week, you know? And I think that the reason we wanted to talk about this particular one is just, it's just a good time of year to remind ourselves to keep our eye on the ball and focus on the ultimate outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. Keeping my eye on the ball. Right. And even though we talk about it all the time, even, you know, I just slipped right into it. You know, I let myself take my eye off that ball, and I'm not sure, saying I would have had a different outcome, but I would feel better about the outcome if I had just, you know, stuck to that principle of focusing on what's the major legal problem that my client is facing here. And it was that he wasn't with his mother, you know?
Well, and I just would add that, you know, we put a lot of ideas out to you guys in the conversations that we have, but we absolutely recognize how hard it is in practice. And it's just a reminder to start where you are, you know? Like, John, you've been doing this for how many years? And it's still a struggle sometimes to keep your eye on the ball. And so I think it's a good reminder for everybody to don't get frustrated with yourself, because it's the natural thing to do, but just keep refocusing and keep reminding yourself. So now we're going to just move on to another concept with Jim.
Yeah. So what we're talking about reminds me that everything we talk about here and all these issues we deal with are really so case by case. And so when you're looking at such a variety of issues coming at you, I want to talk about today is one of the things that we dealt with over the past year was doing things with fidelity. And it's important to do several things in your practice, as we pointed out in a previous podcast, with fidelity, but let's just pick one. And the one I would talk about is getting the abuse report on every case is a great idea. It's not that hard to do, but it's just filled with history on your clients that you may or may not be aware of. And you might get shelter petitions initially in the case that have the list of the past abuse reports that the family's been involved in. And a lot of them might be unfounded, but that doesn't mean there's not some really important information inside those narratives that the investigators have created at the time when they were on the scene with the family 5 years ago. And you might find out about abuse your client suffered at the hands of someone other than the parents that will be mentioned in there or verified in there. And so it's real important to know the history of call-outs to the home and the history of abuse reports, and also those facts that are hidden in the family history that could be really important for your advocacy going forward. So if you can do that one thing with fidelity on every case, it's going to pay off. There's going to be lots of cases where it doesn't, but like we just said, this is very case by case. There's going to be some cases where it does pay off, and it's only through doing it with fidelity that it's going to benefit you and your clients.
Well, I think that's a great example. I think that, you know, that, and for me, that was another takeaway that I was thinking of from the year of everything. I look back on everything we talked about over the years and over the year, and I thought, well, you know, doing a couple of things with fidelity, doing things over and over, even though it might seem rote, even though it's like, okay, your example is a good one, like the abuse reports. You might get abuse reports on five cases in a row and learn nothing new that you didn't already know was there. But on that sixth one, you might find something vital down there. So there's, you know, there's a whole range of things that we should be doing with fidelity, and that's what's gonna eventually move the needle for all of our clients. But it's that consistency that keeps you focused, I think, and keeps you moving forward, and all of us moving in the same direction.
Yeah, it's another way of saying engaging in best practices. Once you realize that there's a best practice, like reading every home study. You do it with fidelity in every case, and that's the, you know, eventually you read the home study where there's someone in that home that did not get background checked and should have been. And that's why you do it with fidelity and you engage in best practices, because if you do that in every case, something goes sideways, you can look back and say, I did my best practices, I did my due diligence.
And I would add that, you know, one of the things that we have to always be mindful of as children's lawyers is kind of our own burnout. And if you're having to think about some of these decisions every file you open, it's taking up energy that you could use on just getting it done. It's sort of why, if you've read any of the stuff on habit development and how just you don't even think about it. You're like, I'm getting those every time. And, you know, maybe one in five, one in 10 is really helpful, but you're not kind of going back and forth. Or should I go to the trouble if you're not routinely getting the home studies, rather than spending your time thinking about, is it worth it? You're just getting it. And you get in that habit. And so there are some kind of personal individual benefits to making some of these decisions and just doing them every time. It might also help your system if they're not giving you these things regularly to get in the habit, which would also be helpful. So I'm going to move on to another concept. And this one we actually talked about in multiple episodes, but I'm going to reference the episode on sex trafficking that we did with Professor Hetherington, because she used a word that I feel like I've been using a lot since then, and that's adultifying or adultification of children. We all know what it means, right? Whether it's in a sex trafficking case or any older youth that comes into our system, it is shocking, absolutely shocking, how quickly the system takes a child that we know has been abused or neglected or any number of things that bring them into the system, and we say they're coming into the system because of their behavior. And I think the reason I want to bring this up again is because we are part of the system and we do sit in court on a regular basis, and we can kind of stop realizing that's happening. But if there's anyone in there that needs to call it out, it is the children's lawyer. And I'm not saying you should go in there and make a scene, but start listening for it. And when you hear the language, whether it's the report to the court or anything written down where it's putting the responsibility for the child's well-being or for their situation or for their placement or for being in the system on the shoulders of a child, we need to be calling it out. And so I thought I wanted to bring that one back up because I think it is one that is very easy to just get used to. And as children's lawyers, you know, sometimes we have to just remind ourselves that we are the ones that need to do that on behalf of the child.
It's so easy to get sucked into that conversation, right? Because what, behavior is communication, right? Isn't that what they say? Jim, am I got the right phrase there? Behavior is communication, right?
Or communication is behavior? I don't know.
Okay, no, anyway, I'm probably choosing the wrong word besides communication. Behavior is communication. The kids their behavior is telling you something, basically, right? And so instead of just like blaming them and treating them like it's their fault, listen to what they're saying with their behavior, even if it's like this repeated behavior. But you, it's so easy to get sucked into the frustration and the almost anger you know, betrayal. I gave you a chance and you still did this. I can't believe how manipulative this child is. You know, we told her if she did A, B, and C, we would give her D and she won't do it. You know, I was in front of a judge the other week and, you know, I had this whole strategy of how I was going to get my client to attend class and, you know, we'll get him what he wants. If he does it, and the judge bought in, she was, I'll tell him, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it failed. It didn't work. And the judge, instead of getting angry, the judge said, you know, he can't attend class. There's something blocking him. We don't know what it is yet, but he can't. And we need to keep working with him until we find out why he literally can't get into, go to school, can't get to the classroom. So I found that very, you know, refreshing and a step away from the traditional thing that we see going on with these teenagers who just seem outwardly defiant, openly defiant. And, you know, as the adults were like, you know, a lot of adults are like, obey me. It doesn't right. work that way.
Right. Well, and that judge, I mean, yes, like you said, how refreshing. Many well-intended judges will do the thing where they sit on the bench and in their robe and look down on the child and think that if we just say it to them from this perspective in a stern voice, that it will change the behavior. And I mean, for some kids, maybe it does. But I think that the way you described that, John, reminded me of another reference back to the sex trafficking podcast, which is that a lot of behaviors are skills that the kids have learned to survive. And that sometimes you can't just take those away because that's how they've made it to the point that they're at in their lives. And so really understanding what they're trying to accomplish through the behavior or the not showing up at class or whatever it is, and solving that versus putting into place more requirements and more, you know, hurdles for them to jump over when that's not really compliance should not be what we're aiming for in dependency court.
Right. And which is not to say that we, you know, excuse behaviors and we don't hold clients accountable, because that's the opposite. That's, we don't want that either, because you're doing a disservice by that too. We're not trying to get them off the hook for everything they do. You want to develop a system of accountability though that makes sense. And you want, and in order to do that, you need to hear what they're telling you with their behavior, and you need to know why, because they may not know why, which goes back to what we talked about practicing with fidelity, what Jim was talking about with maybe if you know all their abuse history, you might understand their behaviors a little better. But if you didn't get those abuse reports, you don't know their whole history. And it happened to me this year. I didn't know I was dealing with a victim of sexual abuse until I got the records. And boy, the case clicked together like a puzzle piece fitting together. I was like, now I understand better why this child behaves the way she's behaving. And the mother was too close to it too. And the foster parents, I had to like, look, everyone, watch me put this puzzle piece together. And then they were like, oh, okay, I understand her behavior now. So anyway, those are three great takeaways. But for me this year, I think the most powerful moment was when our guest, David Ambrose, author of A Place Called Home and keynote speaker at the National Association of Counselor Children's Conference this year, spoke to us about his view of the child welfare system and just his worldview and how, you know, despite everything he'd been through, right, despite growing up in foster care, a system that, let's face it, everyone still feels is very flawed, and probably today more than ever, people are looking at as, you know, this is not a great institution. We need to do better. I think everyone agrees we need to do better. But his perspective on things was just so refreshing and such a new viewpoint, or one you don't hear these days so much. I think actually hearing it from him in his words would be much better than hearing it from me. So why don't we just play that clip and let the audience hear that one more time.
So here's the clip from David Ambrose, and thanks everyone for listening.
I don't know how we can't be optimistic. We have the happiest, healthiest, least racist, least homophobic, least best society we've ever had in this country. We have made so many strides, and it doesn't mean we've solved everything. But if we don't nourish ourselves in the reality of the progress and step back from the clickbait that tells us to be angry and hate each other, then we're not going to nourish our souls for the fight ahead. Dr. King said the arc of justice is long, or the arc of the universe is long, and it bends towards justice. I believe it bends towards justice because there's a bunch of people at the end of it pulling it down towards justice, and it's bending. But we don't see the tremendous progress we've made, and it sometimes feels like we're not going anywhere. When I was born, there were double the number of children living in abject poverty in this country. Today, it's half the number that existed when I was a child. It's 8.4 million. That is entirely too many children, but we've halved it, and we can continue to do that work. When I was born, it was illegal for me to have sex in 38 states as a gay man. That's gone. I can get married. We are making progress. Progress hurts. Progress is never fast enough. But if we don't look in the mirror and value what we've done together, we're not going to go the distance. And at the very moment, the diverse people having a seat at the table of power, we're being taught that the power does not matter and to ignore it and to believe that government can't work, can't be made to work. And I just don't believe it. I'm here because of imperfect government. I'm here because folks paid their taxes and I got welfare. I'm here because I had imperfect healthcare, imperfect foster care, imperfect student loans, and yet here I am. I believe in the inherent goodness of the people in the United States of America. In any other time, I would not be sitting here talking to you. It was a brutal struggle, but I got here because of this imperfect thing we call government. It's never going to be done. Government is a constant iteration, and we have to keep at it because kids don't vote. Poor people don't have political power as much. And people that are mentally ill and challenged don't have the capacity. So we need everyone to stop giving up on the American project and lean in, because we're making progress. And those that can't lean in need us to care enough to do our work as citizens.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.